So please welcome Gene Melter.
Thank you, Kurt. Good evening, everyone. Well, every once in a while in your life, you meet someone who just blows apart your perspective. Drastically, permanently. So for me, one of these people was a fantastic young woman I met when I was 23, and she was 17. So at this point, I was out of college, and I was living in Berkeley, and I was just piecing together a living, you know, like how a lot of people do in their 20s, just kind of lost, just trying to stay afloat. And one of my part-time jobs was being an attendant for Patty, a disabled student who attended UC Berkeley. So she was a freshman, 17, and she was disabled from muscular dystrophy. She was a wheelchair user. She used an electric wheelchair. And at that time, at least, Berkeley had a wonderful program for disabled students. So they had dorm rooms that were kind of kitted out, and then they had attendants, and I was one of them. I was her morning attendant. I got her ready for school every day from 5 a.m. to 9 a.m. It took 4 hours. So I want to tell you a bit more about Patty. So 17, so she just graduated from high school, from a high school in San Francisco. She was born and raised in San Francisco. She was the daughter of immigrants. Her father was Haitian, he was black. Her mother was Japanese. So she was a triple minority. So she was black, Asian, and disabled. And she was a brilliant, hilarious girl. She was the valedictorian of her class, but she was also, you know, a heavy drug user, partier. I'm just gonna describe, and I should mention her moment of celebrity. She was Jerry Lewis's poster child as a toddler, his Muscular Dystrophy Association. And she was thrilled to be in college. She was thrilled to have gotten away from her conservative immigrant parents. And now she could go wild within her, you know, her apparent limitations. But so I just want to describe our morning routine. So I would arrive at 5 and get her ass out of bed. Sometimes that was hard if she'd been partying heavily the night before. And then I would lecture her about her drug use, and then she would laugh at me. And then I would haul her onto like a portable toilet. And so there was toilet, then down the hall to the shower, and then cute outfit, hair, makeup. She could do her makeup herself, so she didn't have really good her limbs at this point. It's a progressive disease. She couldn't do much with her limbs, but her wrists and hands worked pretty well. So if you placed her, you know, beauty products just so she could do her makeup. And while she was doing that, I would zip to the cafeteria and get her breakfast. And all the while, Prince is blasting from her record player. That was one of the first things I did, actually, was put on a Prince album. So she was a very early Prince fan. And so the music would be blaring, and then we'd be talking. So we talked for 20 hours a week. So we're both good at talking. We became very close. We shared everything. And what she shared with me was so much more valuable than the crap I shared with her. So what I learned from her was what it was like, what her experience as a black person, an Asian person, and a disabled person in this world that marginalizes those people. And I'll tell you this is one thing I learned from her. Disabled people find their social difficulties much more painful than their physical difficulties. So she just resented the hell out of able-bodied people condescending to her, ignoring her, shunning her, leaving her out of stuff. That's what really hurt her. She could bear all her all the pain, all the inconvenience of her physical difficulties. She said the one thing she minded, like she could handle like not walking and all that, but she did she did feel very, very sad that she couldn't dance, and she loved, you know, watching people dance. But other than that, it was the social difficulties that bothered her. But she just blew apart. I'm a white, middle class, kind of sheltered little Catholic girl, and she just made me see the world so differently and empathize with many more groups of people, just talking about her daily experiences. And here's another thing, is she showed me the absurdity of us assuming that people who are disabled are not sexual. It's such a failure of fucking imagination to imagine that people in wheelchairs don't want to have sex or don't have sexual feelings. And she wasn't paralyzed. She was in pain, but she had all the feelings everybody else does. And even her own parents didn't have enough imagination. They never imagined she'd ever have a boyfriend or ever get married or anything like that. And that really hurt her. But she did have those intentions, especially since she'd now gotten away from them, because they had been her attendants all her life, and now she had people like me. She had three of us. And so I'll just give you an example of her attempts to have these adventures. So I lived at that time with an elderly woman. I was her companion, just like in, you know, Jane Eyre or whatever. And wealthy woman. I lived in this antique-filled, beautiful house with this woman. I was in exchange for room and board, and I was one of her companions. And she really wanted to meet Patty, and Patty really wanted to meet her, because, of course, I told them about each other. And so one Saturday, Edna and I invited Patty to lunch. And then my job was to fix a lovely ladies' lunch with china and all that. And so I did this, and Patty, in her electric wheelchair, if it was charged up, she could go miles. And it was only a mile from her dorm where this gal lived, where I live with this gal. And so we're waiting. It was like noon. We're waiting. The lunch is all ready. And we're waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. And Patty didn't show up. And I was alternately really pissed at her and then also really worried. But pre-cell phones, you know, you couldn't get in touch with anybody or track them or anything. Didn't know if I should go out looking for her, like what. Worried, and finally the phone rings, and it's Patty apologizing for not showing up, and this is what had happened. So she's set out from her dorm room, and on the way to Edna's house, she was on a sidewalk, and Berkeley's quite hilly, and she'd lost control of the chair, and a wheel was caught in the edge of the sidewalk, and she was flipped into the ivy. And she was just laying there, completely helpless. So she just has to lay there until someone comes along. So she lay there, and she wasn't even, she says, very visible. You know, she was kind of buried in there, but the chair was like kind of topsy-turvy. She's just laying there. And finally, this guy comes by on his bike, and she says he looked like a Greek god. She said he was gorgeous, like a golden tan, muscular bike pants, gorgeous guy. And she calls out to him, and he stops his bike, and lifting her was hard because she was a dead weight. It was very hard for me to do without, you know, hurting her and stuff. But she gives him instructions, and he lifts her out of the ivy like she was a feather, she said. And he gets her in her chair, and he adjusts her just so. And then he invites her home with him, invites her to his house for lunch. And she was like, yeah. And she went to his house and had a lovely lunch, and then he walked her back to her dorm room. And unfortunately, nothing sexual happened, but it was super exciting. And the sort of a thing that wouldn't have happened to her when she was like hanging out with her parents. And so I understood completely, explained the situation to Edna, and she said, yeah, she made the right choice, skipping the ladies' lunch. Well, eventually I threw my back out lifting Patty, and I had to quit that job, but we remained friends. And one day she called me up all excited. Prince had made a movie, Purple Rain, and she had to see it. She had to see it opening night and was coming to San Francisco with such and such a date. We had to go, would I take her? So we hatched this plan. So we're over in Berkeley, right? And so we'd have her parents come with a special van, pick us both up. We go back to the parents' house, drop them off. She did not want her conservative immigrant parents seeing Purple Rain. It would just totally ruin Prince for her. They wouldn't understand it, and it would just... So I was to drive the van. So I'm observing the dad. I'm trying to figure out like how to drive the thing and then operate the lift and strap Patty in safely and all that. And so we dropped them off, and they looked really worried when I drove away with their daughter. And rightly so. And they didn't even know the half of it, that I was a terrible driver, and I didn't know my way around San Francisco. I'm so concerned about her, kind of her experience of pain every time I lurch or hit a bump or something. So I'm driving very anxiously through San Francisco, and I should have really, really nailed down the location of the movie theater, but I did not. I just had a kind of a vague idea. So, and I should have completely researched the parking situation, since we had this big old van that has this big thing that comes out of it and comes down, and then she has to roll out of it. You know, it's not like your usual parking situation in San Francisco. So we're driving, I'm driving what I think is the direction of the theater, and then I see these like vacant lots. It's kind of this industrial area with dirt, you know, and trash and just a few vehicles, and I think, but this is perfect, because unlike a parking garage, I can get her out of the van. So I park there, and Patty doesn't think this looks right. It's probably not near the theater and stuff, but I'm older and I know how to drive, so she trusts me. So I successfully, safely get her out of the van, and now we're in no man's land, and it's getting dark, and we could be mugged or killed in this icky area, and she's bumping along on this dirt kind of vacant lot type of surface, and she's just like, ow, 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 ow. It was awful, and I'm going, oh, we're almost there, and so finally we encounter another human being and ask directions, and we're pretty friggin' far from the theater. But at least now we know where it is. And Patty, you know, kind of puts her chair into high gear, and I'm trotting along beside her, and she is pissed. This is normally really calm and patient, wise, serene girl, is just pissed, and she's calling me every name, rightly so. And we're trying, and we get to the theater just a few minutes before showtime. There's a long line, and I'm just thinking, oh my God, the biggest Prince fan in San Francisco is not going to get a ticket, and she's really suffered to see this movie, and it's all my fault. We go to the back of the line, and there's just hundreds of people, and then I get my only good idea of the evening. And Patty didn't like to play the disabled card, you know, it hurt her pride or something. But then she also, you know, fought for disabled rights. So I left her in the back of the line. I went up to that ticket taker and I explained that I was with someone in a wheelchair, huge Prince fan. Any accommodations? Yes. Wheelchair users are allowed to just sit right in the aisle. So we were ushered past the line into the theater, kind of down in front. I was given a seat right next to her. And if you haven't seen it, Purple Rain is like not really strong in the plot area. But the musical numbers are fantastic, and Patty was just enraptured. She was just thrilled out of her mind and completely forgave me. And I just want to add that I don't know why we fell out of touch or when we fell out of touch. I really am vague on all that, but it's been, you know, decades. And she didn't have a great life expectancy. Like, she always talked about how she might not live past 30. So, you know, I didn't know how this would go. But I Googled her, and she's pretty darn famous and successful. She's a psychologist, and she's a documentary filmmaker, and she's an advocate for disabled people's rights and rights of all other kinds of marginalized people. And I saw videos of her and interviews and articles and all sorts of things. So she's totally fulfilled the promise of that wonderful 17-year-old. Thank you. Wow.